Dear wonderful listeners, if you're looking to define your brand's core message but aren't sure where to start, that's where Smart Beauty can help. We're offering a 90-minute deep dive into your brand to give you clear action points on your messaging and strategy to help you grow and scale, so that you can get noticed by customers, retailers, and investors, and start to see sales soar. And the cost of this deep dive is redeemable against any larger project you work with us on, so you get all of that insight and value with minimal risk. We're looking for a few new clients who are ready to see amazing results. Just email hello@smartbeautycreative.com to find out more. Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Today, I'm joined by Rishan Dorset, founder of The Glossary, a pioneering whole food, superfood skincare brand built on the philosophy that what you put on your body should be as nutritious as what you put in it. In this episode, Rishan shares her fascinating journey from working in criminal and human rights law to becoming a natural skincare formulator and entrepreneur. Yes, she formulates her own products. We discuss how she self-funded her business by working double shifts, her commitment to cold-pressed, nutrient-dense ingredients, and the challenges of building an indie beauty brand from the ground up. If you're interested in sustainable beauty, entrepreneurship, or just curious about how natural skincare products are actually formulated, you're in for a treat. Rishan offers incredibly candid insights into pricing strategies, building community, navigating retail partnerships, and staying true to your brand values in a crowded market. The Glossary has already won beauty awards and developed cult products like their Clean Green Superfood Serum, all while maintaining their commitment to eco-friendly practices and high-performance natural formulations. So whether you're an aspiring founder, skincare enthusiast, or someone who's just interested in how beauty businesses can thrive, I know you'll find value in our chat today. Let's dive in. So Rishan, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Really lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So you launched The Glossary with kind of a fresh perspective on natural skincare. What inspired you to create the brand, and what kind of gap did you see in the market that you felt like the time was right for a brand like The Glossary to launch?
Before I was a founder of a skincare brand or a natural skincare formulator, I was working in criminal and human rights law as a paralegal. So I was handling joint enterprise murder and public law cases. And the job really required me to go to a lot of high security prisons and crown courts. And they don't really teach you this at uni, that whilst I have a passion for like justice, they don't teach you the emotional management side of going into those kind of high intensity cases. Yeah, so I just remember being like, I think I was a bit bewildered, really. And I remember thinking, oh, this doesn't really align with me. I'm not really, like, I don't really feel comfortable. The emotional stress of it all. And I kind of ignored that, but it all came to a head about a year and a half later. And I just remember breaking down in my kitchen to my mum and my sister. And I was just, I'm just not happy. I don't feel fulfilled in this role. So yeah. I quit. And when I quit, I was looking for ways to get back to my normal bubbly self. I have quite like a positive outlook on life, quite a high energy personality. And I feel like that job had just taken all of that from me. So on that journey, I started then exploring wellness, and that eventually led me down to veganism. And then as I was being more conscious of what I was putting into my body, that natural curiosity then branched out to my skincare routine. And I was just really frustrated. And I think I was just also really annoyed that I was spending money at paying a premium price for ingredients that had little to no nutritional benefit to my skin, that were really ultra processed, that were really synthetic, that weren't really good for my skin's health or the health of the environment. So I thought, there's clearly a need for like nutrient rich skincare here that looks after your skin and looks after the planet. So that's how I decided then to retrain as a natural skincare formulator and then eventually launch The Glossary. So it's been a bit of a journey, but I can see that all needed to happen for me to get point. Yeah.
So you actually formulate the product. So as like many founders, they kind of outsource that side of things, but you are actually putting the, putting these formulas together and actually,
Yeah.
there
So
in the
I kind of
lab.
describe it, yeah, I kind of describe it like Breaking Bad, if anyone's watched Breaking Bad, but just
Oh,
using
I love
natural
Breaking Bad.
ingredients. So that's what I'm like, having different formulas, making sure the formulas work. So
Yeah.
that's the part that I really do enjoy. It does take quite a long time, but I really do enjoy that creative process. And when you finally get it, and then as the brand has received like beauty awards and recognition from different press houses, you're like, ah, it's like extremely rewarding.
So when people ask you about your products, you can really go into the
Yeah.
weeds and really sort of go into the, delve into the actual granular
Yeah.
science as opposed to just telling a nice marketing story. You can.
Exactly. I know what's in there.
Yeah, and that makes a difference because I think so many customers now want brands to be transparent about what exactly is in the products, how the formulas actually work. And I think that a lot of brands still are struggling to be upfront and honest because a lot of them
Yeah.
still don't really know. They're kind of, well, we'll check with the formulators and then get back to you.
Yeah.
And there's kind of that secondhand knowledge that I think creates sort of issues when you, as from a customer's perspective.
Exactly that.
And there
Exactly that.
seems
I
to be,
wanted to.
sorry, carry
No,
on.
no, no, no. I wanted to have that conviction because I didn't have any beauty contacts or beauty knowledge prior to that course. I wanted to have the confidence that if someone did challenge me about what was in the products, I knew
Yeah.
I could say, this is the ingredients list. This is why we've put it in. So that's also why I decided to manufacture myself.
Did anything when you were studying shock or surprise you? When it comes to like formulating how products are formulated.
Yeah, when I suppose when I was doing that initial jerk like search of the different beauty brands and what they were using, I think what just really shocked me is that there's still the misconception that natural skincare doesn't work. And that course taught me that actually if you use high quality, high performance ingredients, you can get incredible results. And then I was also shocked that there's still a misconception that luxury price tags means luxury ingredients. Like even this week, I've gone into beauty aisles and I've read some of the ingredients that are in some of these established luxury brands, and it's microplastics, it's petrochemicals, it's really cheap industrialized ingredients. And I'm like, wow, I didn't, the customer doesn't know that. Not a lot of customers know this. So yeah, it's quite shocking.
Definitely. And I feel like when it comes to superfoods, there's a lot of crossover into things like skincare and hair care. Would you say that's the case? And do you think that's kind of going to set to continue?
Yeah, I definitely see the, I suppose people keep talking about the intersection between skincare and wellness, and I definitely think we're going to see that in the coming years in the beauty industry. People want to look after themselves, I suppose, from a holistic level, and skincare does play a part of that, and so does what you eat, so does your lifestyle, how you talk about yourself. So I definitely see that interconnectedness growing.
How did you land on the concept of cold-pressed superfoods, and how important was it kind of finding that niche when starting your brand?
It was from the connection of being vegan. So I just started eating more fresh fruits and vegetables, and it was just that I just had more energy, my brain fog cleared. I just felt more comfortable in myself. So it naturally, when I started then thinking about what ingredients that I wanted to use in the glossary, it was that natural progression to cold press, because for me, cold press retain more of the nutrients of that fruit and vegetable.
Yes.
So in order to have a high performance nutrient dense product, I knew I wanted to use a majority of those ingredients. And yeah, I suppose reflecting from my diet, it just, and the positive impacts that had had, it just made sense for me to carry that through to my skincare routine as well.
Yeah, definitely. Because it's not about just what you ingest, but you're putting stuff on your
No.
skin that's then being absorbed in into your bloodstream. So it
Exactly,
does make a lot of
exactly.
sense. And a lot of niche founders, I think, struggle to stand out in a crowded market. What would be your advice to other brand founders when it comes to storytelling and really kind of setting yourself apart from all of the industry noise that's out there?
That's a really good question. I would definitely say you have to think about your why and why you started it, and then how it aligns with your, I suppose, personal story. A lot of founders that have a lot of brands that are really successful, they you just remember their founder story. Even if you haven't connected with that founder in real life, you've seen their story across digital or across social, and it just sticks in your head. So you have to get really granular of how, I suppose, your personal frustrations have then allowed you to create a brand that's solving an issue for you and people, for your target consumer. So that's how I went about it with the glossary. So I think you really need to, what is your why? I suppose Simon Sinek always says it, what is your why? And how have you used that why then to create your brand or your service that you're putting out into the world?
Yeah, because that's really the heart of your brand. It's not just the products, but why have you created them? Because there's so much that's already out there. Like, what is it that you're adding that, people haven't seen before? So I think that's super important. And also when it comes to words like natural and green and clean, there's obviously like a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of brands paying lip service to the issue. I mean, how would you advise beauty founders kind of communicate transparency and efficacy without kind of falling into the trap of greenwashing, like from drawing from your own experience with the glossary?
Yeah, so we try and avoid using words like clean or green because they don't really have a standard definition. And I think a lot of the brands, there's a lot of brands doing it well, don't get me wrong. But then I also think it's been used by people who are not doing it so well to try and greenwash and pretend that they're also
For
being
sure.
ethical and more sustainable. So I would say that there's little things that brand founders could do. So here at the Glossary, as you've already mentioned, we use cold pressed ingredients. They've been processed using little to no heat. We then use eco-friendly packaging materials. So all of our craft paper boxes are all our boxes are craft paper, so is our tape. And then even down to our package of peanuts, they're biodegradable. So there's little things that you can shout about that actually make a big difference to consumers and customers looking to support beauty brands like us, without having to, I don't know, shout too loudly about being clean, because I think the beauty consumers becoming really a lot more savvy now, and they can see through the mud, they can see
For
through it
sure.
all. So I think just being really clear on just the little things that you're doing, because at the end of the day, a lot of us independent brands, we are usually a small team, a team of one. So even the small differences that you are making can add up to incredible change.
Definitely. And I think sort of being eco-friendly, it's not really even a sort of a USP anymore. It's
Yeah,
be like a
it's a
standard.
must. Yeah, like I think even like veganism and cruelty free, I think it's like a health hygiene issue now. I think all brands should really be trying to strive towards that.
Couldn't agree more. And when it comes to community, obviously that's very important to your brand. How did you go about building the community around the glossary? And how would you kind of advise other beauty founders create a community from scratch organically? Because I imagine that's no easy task. So what were the kind of
So it's interesting that you said that, because even I think it was like a couple of weeks ago, I sat down and had conversations with 15 of our VIP customers, and I just really got to know them, because I got to a point where I had to hold my hands up and be like, okay, I don't really know them. I know what of their favorite products, I know how frequently they buy, but I didn't really know where they were shopping, what they've done in their spare time, what they like to splurge on, what they like to save on, how do they take time out to enjoy themselves or relax. So I sat down with 15 of them via Zoom and then just had a chat with them, and it was really nice. I remember coming off the calls just feeling on a high, because it was just so nice to get to know them, and then for them get to know me. And it didn't cost anything. It cost what, a afternoon and some free products for the people that took the calls with me, in return for like incredible insights that I can then implement into the glossary's digital strategies and new product development strategies. So I would say to any founders doing it, you don't have to spend so much on expensive focus groups. You can literally just book in Zoom calls, and the community, they really enjoyed it. And now I've just re really built some great connections with some of the Glossary's VIP customers. So I would definitely say you can do it on a small or no budget. And I would definitely say bringing them along the journey. So I've got better at doing it now, but storytelling on socials and showing them the process. So I'm trying to launch new products this year. And I've just asked them, what do you want to see from the glossary? What ingredients would you like? What benefits would you like to the product to have? Even down to the packaging, what would you like it to look like? And that creates just a bit of excitement and creates a bit more brand loyalty than just creating products that I want to release.
Yeah, and it shows that you're listening to your customers as
Yeah.
well. And it's kind of a circular process because then the products that you're putting out, you know that that's what they are interested in and what they're going to
Exactly.
buy.
Exactly that.
Which I think is hugely important. And when it comes to funding, obviously that is a huge barrier to a
Yeah.
lot of startups. How did you self-fund in the early days of the Glossary, and what advice would you give to other founders?
So I actually worked two jobs. I remember now I used to work two part-time jobs, and then I left to go work in a warehouse because I was just able to earn more money. So it was quite intense, but I remember at the time, even though I was absolutely exhausted, I was just like, no, you're doing it for a reason. This is not going to be the long term. So I was able to save up. I can't remember the exact amount, but I know it was under 5K. And then I used that 5K to then invest in the branding. So we got professional branding done. I then had to bulk buy the ingredients, packaging, then done the website development, and then all our product safety testing. So yeah, it was kind of a hard graft at the time because I was doing back-to-back shifts. I would do daytime at one job and then go work a night shift in the other. So yeah,
Oh my
quite
gosh.
intense. I know, quite intense, but it enabled me to save enough for the initial investment.
What kept you going through that time? Because I imagine it was, it must have been like a real kind of test of your faith in the brand and your kind of dream for what you were wanting to build.
Yeah, it was horrible, but I had no, there was no other way around it. I couldn't rely on a friends and family round. I didn't really know or understand like VC investment or agent investment, if I'm totally being honest, at the beginning of my journey. So I just had to get my head down and yeah, push through it.
I think there's a lot of gatekeeping when it comes to advice with regards to what you just mentioned. What would you say are like the best kind of, did you sort of like find any resources or things that you know now that you didn't know then that you wish you'd kind of found out about, or
Yeah, so
somebody had
I,
told you about that had been more freely available?
yeah, so I learned about local grants. So I didn't know this initially. So where I'm based, you can get local grants from the council. So I didn't know that, but I know that now. And then I found out about Virgin Startup, and then they offer business loans, but they have a more comfortable interest or repayment terms than banks do. But even to this day, how many years in I'm into my journey, I still don't understand how to go about finding like VC investment. People have said LinkedIn, and I'm like, but that just takes such
A
an
link
amount
needle
of time, and
haystack.
you need to get really granular of who you're looking for. If you don't know who you're looking for, how could then you go and search for it? But I've also been told that there's found out from 100 allies actually that there's brokers that you can use who can then go out and find you VCs or angel investments, so you're not doing it yourself. But Glossary's 5 years old now, and I've just learned about that, so it's taken
Yeah,
some
I mean,
time.
that's the problem. If the information isn't freely available, if you don't know, you don't know. And I think that's
Exactly.
a huge barrier for a lot of startups. And obviously you built the glossary through organic marketing and social media, which is incredible. What strategies would you say worked best when it came to generating visibility without having that huge budget?
Yeah, so it was definitely organic influencer outreach and then PR, and then I started just attending networking events. So with the organic outreach to influencers, before Before I even started launching the glossary, I had my Instagram platform, and I would go through other brands and see who was liking their other aligned brands and see what influencers were liking their posts, and then I would just follow them and then start building up, I suppose, digital relationship through liking their content, maybe was commenting, and I started building up that relationship that way. And then I worked with an incredible freelance PR from the beginning. And she was just a powerhouse. They just was able to get us into such incredible press. I do think, looking back as well, really great work ethic. But you know how they say you also luck comes into it. It was during COVID. Everyone was at home. Everyone was
Captive
looking.
audience.
Yes, everyone was wanting to improve their skincare routines. Also, around the Black Lives Matter movement, people were looking to support more Black-owned brands. So I do think that it worked hand in hand. And then I then started joining aligned communities. So as I mentioned, I joined Virgin Startup, started to go into a lot of those masterclasses and then founder-led events. And then I also joined the Stack World by Sharmadine Reed. And she also had a lot of founder-led, creative-led events that I went to as well. I just started, I suppose, putting my brand out there, I suppose, leading as the face of the brand. So there was a way that I was able to do it with little to no cost, really.
That's amazing. I'm a member of the Stack World as well. I think it's such an incredible resource
It really
for
is.
business owners, and Sharmadine is obviously like a powerhouse.
Powerhouse. Absolute.
Do you want to name drop the freelance PR that you worked with?
Yeah, so she's not in, I don't think she's doing it now. I know she now works, she's gone back in brand side. She works with a brand now doing their PR and influencer marketing.
And obviously, like the skincare space is very competitive. How do you kind of balance that with being sort of purpose driven alongside the kind of commercial realities of always having to kind of keep up with the trends and, being innovative and kind of one step ahead?
It's a really good question. I think here at the Glossary, we're all about, I suppose, long-term skin health. So I don't really get caught up in the trends. I don't really know. I suppose it's like a personal preference. I see the trends, and then I see thousands of beauty brands come up with like lip oils, or they'll try and catch the wave of like a TikTok trend, and that just doesn't really align with what we want to do here at the Glossary. We're all about, minimal skincare that has high performance effects. So I also do think, speaking to our customers aren't really duped by the trends
I was
either.
going
So
to say, I don't think customers are
yeah,
that bothered, to
no,
be honest.
it just doesn't, and it's just expensive. I'm not gonna create a
You're
whole
churning out
new,
stuff that
every
goes
time there's a
against the
new
whole,
trend. It's not,
sustainability ethos,
it's not
because
ethical, it's not sustainable. So yeah, I don't really get caught up in that. Some brands do it, and I think the brands that do it well are the brands that do have that budget behind them, or suppose they do have that celebrity led founder, and that makes sense for them to do that. But given the values that we have here, it just doesn't really align with the purpose.
Yeah, I think if you've got like a strong, heartfelt story that's really authentic to you and people can resonate with, that's all that you really need, isn't it? As opposed to trying to go viral on TikTok.
I'm not gonna bring out a lip oil just because it's trending,
Yeah,
what is that? I'm just adding to the millions of products that are already out there.
no, 100%. And going back to the idea of kind of a lot of knowledge and resources being kind of withheld from a lot of sort of startups. Pricing, I think, is a huge issue for indie beauty brands. And they're really, from speaking to founders like yourself, there doesn't really seem to be that much information out there on how to price your product. So what factors did you consider when setting your pricing, and how do you think founders can make their products value driven and accessible without kind of undermining the brand?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I would have really understood it had it not been through the course. So the course that I took with Formula Britannica, it was an international entrepreneur program, and it did have a section on pricing. So it of course, included your raw ingredients, your packaging. I've also been told that you should include your shipping in there as well, and then also factor in your margins if you want to go to retail. Because again, I didn't know this until I started then reaching out to retailers, how much a margin these retailers take. It can be
Yeah.
up to like 70%. And
Insane.
I was thrown off by that. I didn't think it would be anywhere close to that. So yeah, I would say definitely raw ingredients, packaging, most definitely your time as well. And I think we don't really factor in well, if you're self-formulating, people tend not to factor in their time. But that is also important because that's the bulk amount, well, for
100%.
me especially, that's the bulk amount of time formulating, shipping costs, and then you also really need to factor in those margins for retail, because if your margins aren't correct, then retail is just going to swallow you whole.
That's the thing. People think, oh, when they get into a retailer, that's kind of the end of the rainbow and roll credits. But actually, that's when the real work begins, because there's not really much profit to be made from what you're
No,
saying.
and then you have to pay. I didn't know until I started reaching out to these retailers and speaking to my other founder friends that you also have to pay for the marketing, any promotions that they do, dependent on where you sit on the shelf. It's just so expensive, so expensive.
Would you say that's one of the biggest challenges that you've faced as an indie beauty brand founder?
Yeah, for sure. And also, yeah, it's not, when you're having these conversations with retailers, it's not really upfront. They don't say, okay, it's going to cost this much until you're further down the line, I suppose, until you're further to agreeing to be on that retail, in that retailer. So it is quite daunting going into it as an indie brand, knowing that your margins are already severely cut, and that on top of that, there's additional costs from, as I mentioned, like the marketing and the promotion. So it is a hindrance, which is why here at The Glossary, we're looking more for the indie, smaller retailers to start with before going to, I suppose, the big guys.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good strategy. Were there any other kind of major challenges? I mean, I'm sure there were, but what are the kind of main ones that you think are very kind of universal when it comes to launching a skincare line?
I think for me, coming from the law industry, it was a lot of fears. So there was obviously the imposter syndrome, not really knowing anyone in the industry, or not really knowing if what I was doing was good enough. I had to get to terms with that really at the beginning, and just trusting that it would work out really. During 11 We launched 11 days before COVID, and I remember
Oh
starting
my
to see the
gosh.
news. I remember starting to see the news trickling, and I thought, this can't be real life. I've gone through all those back-to-back shifts. We're finally in the process of launching, and now the world seems like it's about to shut down. So switching from, I suppose, a lack to a growth mindset was really, really key from the outset. And just trusting that it was going to be okay. I had come so far in law, so I suppose I really had to tell myself to pick my heart. I could have stayed in law and struggled along doing that, or I could have found my feet and worked harder in building a skincare brand. But at least I knew that I was happy and fulfilled doing it. So there had to be a quick mindset shift that I really had to adopt, because it's hard.
Oh
It
my gosh.
is extremely challenging.
I think mindset shift is kind of the key to successful entrepreneurism. I know from my own experience that, the rewards are so incredible, but you just have to stay in that everything's going to be all right mentality. And it's like some days
It's
I'm
a dark
like on a
place,
high, and
isn't
other
it?
days I'm like got my head in my hands, like what have I done? So
No, I'm
it's
with
so
you.
tough.
I'm having a big week this week, but who knows what tomorrow may bring? You just never know.
Exactly. It's a whole roller coaster of
It
emotions.
is, it is, it is that blind faith. But as you said, the rewards are just amazing.
Yeah, and I truly think that entrepreneurship is going to be the great leveler in our society. When it comes to, building an industry that we want to see that, having true equality and feeling empowered in the workplace, I think that, entrepreneurship is the only way that we're going to level the playing field. I don't know
I
if
totally
you
agree. No,
agree.
I totally agree. Taking the control back.
Yeah, because I feel you can't succeed in systems that weren't set up for.
No, you can't. Especially going with the how the UK government is at the minute. I just don't think they want people to really survive, like in, I suppose, 9 to 5. You get to a certain pay threshold, and then the government takes 40%, then 60%. It's what in, how are you going to feel inspired to work harder when you know that you're just gonna half,
Don't have that
nearly half of your
incentive.
wage is going back to the government? It's just no incentive to keep working hard, and they work you hard in corporate. It's not like they
Oh my gosh, yes.
help you get work to the bone.
And just that, having to dilute your personality to fit into corporate culture and the code switching, I'm sure you have experience of that. And if you're neurodivergent, having to kind of mask, it's just exhausting, isn't it? For
It's
me,
wing
it's like,
clipping a bit. It
yeah.
didn't align with me. I think you have to be a certain personality type to get on with corporate, and it just, didn't agree with me at all.
And when it comes to just circling back to sustainability, obviously, to be sustainable costs more. How would you kind of advise founders who want to be as sustainable as possible, but they're working with a smaller budget? So if they want to find sustainable suppliers, they, obviously have to work out how they're going to balance everything, because obviously it costs more than working with kind of regular suppliers.
That's true. I would say, look, choose one thing. So we can't be sustainable. Well, you can, but at a smaller level, you can't be sustainable at everything. So for me, I've chosen to go with ingredients, but people might want to choose going with, I don't know, a ethical manufacturer, or really getting down to the nitty-gritty of their packaging. They might want to be using sugarcane packaging instead of plastic packaging. Like, choose something and do that really well. And then I suppose you don't have to worry about the extra costs of trying to be sustainable in all areas. So I suppose that's where it's gonna eat into your
Stumbling block.
margins. That's where it's just gonna cause excessive stress. Choose one thing, and then in your marketing, in your brand strategy, shout about you being the best in that one thing. And then as you grow, you can start, I suppose, branching out into more sustainable processes. But in the meantime, while you're still in that growing phase, I think, as I mentioned, picking one thing and just doing that incredibly well, and knowing and backing yourself that, okay, I've got the best cold pressed ingredients, and then going from there is a really great starting point.
Definitely. And telling a transparent story about it. So rather than saying, well, we're not fully sustainable yet, but
But we're
this is kind
trying.
of, we're trying our best. We're progress, not
It's
perfection.
like all of us, exactly. We can't, I'm suppose we're not sustainable in all areas, but we're all doing our bit. And the customer just values that authenticity, rather than, I suppose, as we mentioned earlier, trying to shout about you being clean in all areas, but you're not doing all those areas right, or at the best of your ability.
Because you will get found out eventually,
They'll
and
sniff you out. They
and called
will.
out.
Yes, exactly. And in this digital age, people love
Everyone's
to.
safe.
No one. No one.
What product would you say you're the most proud of? Like, what would you say is like kind of your baby that kind of encapsulates the range the best?
I would definitely say it's our Clean Green Superfood Serum. So that was one of the first products that we launched. And it's really good for restoring your skin's natural glow, locking in moisture, and brightening any dullness that you may be experiencing. And it honestly took me such a long time to formulate the, because I was using cold pressed ingredients, and they have various different, like, scent, natural scents and textures. Every time that I was, going through that formulation process, it just felt like I was taking 2 steps back, and I just couldn't get the skin feel right. So the skin feel alone, working with the, I believe we've got about 20 ingredients in there, just took such a long time, just for the skin feel. And then for the natural scent, so we use natural essential oils in there as well. I believe there's 5: rose geranium, bergamot, lemongrass, tea tree, and lavender. Then trying to get those into a really nice, like, sensual experience but also mask, not totally mask, but also complement the natural scents of the cold press oils. Just took ages. I must have exhausted my mum and my sister by going through, what do you think of this now? Try this. What do you
They
think
were the
of
guinea
this texture?
pigs.
They were the guinea pigs. And I remember my sister just being like, yeah, it's okay. And I'm like, no, you need to give me a bit more emotion. She's in like physiotherapy. She's in physiotherapy, so beauty is not her area. But I was just like, no, I need more from you. So that really took a long time. But once I got it right, it has become our cult product, and it's the product that most people who try the glossary for the first time, they usually try clean greens, and then they tend to branch out into other products. And it was also the product that won best facial oil in the West Women's Health Beauty Awards. So we
Oh,
launched it in
fantastic.
March, and by September we had won that, which is just, again, just testament to,
Amazing.
I know, thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So that, I'm really proud of that one.
And what's the kind of big picture vision for the glossary? Like 5 or 10 years' time, what's on your kind of vision board if you're into that? What would be the dream for
Yes.
you?
That is a really good question. And I think about this all the time. So I definitely see the glossary developing into more of a lifestyle brand where we encompass really nourishing whole food ingredients that take care of your skin from the inside out. So branching into aligned sectors, also becoming more of a community-led brand. I do want to have in the future IRL flagship stores. I also do see it being a sort of like holistic wellness brand that encompasses products,
Yes.
services that also just cater to your environment of healthy skin. Of course, here in the UK, further afield abroad. So yeah, the vision board is vast, and it keeps changing every day. But I'm like, no,
As it should.
I will achieve this. One step in front of the other. That's all I say to myself. Consistency, and I'll get there. I'll get there.
I'm sure you will. And yeah, I'm sure you've kind of heard the news about Carol's daughter and how it's been reacquired by the
Yes, I did see
original
that.
founder. I mean, would you be ideally be eyeing up kind of being acquired by a conglomerate? Would that be on the cards for you, do you think?
I don't know, at this such early stage, I don't know. I would have to say I don't know, but never say never, never. But if it was to be acquired, it would have to be a bigger company that really does align with the glossary values. And if we was even
Yes.
considering something like that, there would be stringent questions that I would
Of
have to
course.
ask them to make sure that they're taking care of the brand, because I've seen it. I've seen it with especially black-owned brands. When they do become acquired, there does seem to be a level of distrust from the customers that the conglomerate that is acquiring the brand is then gonna stick to the same formulas. So it would have to be like a due diligence to make sure that even though they're taking over the brands, maybe I'm involved in the product development side, so we can
Yes.
make sure that future products are still aligning with the glossary values despite a change of ownership. Because I get it, I totally get it. People do think that these bigger brands, I mean, we see it in the industry, they do acquire these brands, all of a sudden, they're no longer using glass packaging, they're using plastic, they're
Sure.
using filler ingredients, they've changed the formula. So at this stage, I can't see it, but I would say never.
No, definitely. I mean, there are some larger conglomerates, won't name names, but are kind of notorious for buying brands and kind of bleeding them dry and like rinsing them for what they're worth and then discarding them. It's
Yeah. It's horrible. And you think
very
that poor
awful.
founder, they've spent their whole
Yeah.
life building it up. It's just an incredible moment to be able to, okay, I've achieved the heights that I have.
Yeah.
Now let me pass the baton so that they can then build on it. And they crumble. It's horrible to see.
Really, really awful. But on to happier things. What is kind of in the immediate future that you're allowed to talk about when it comes to the glossary? Like any cool new SKUs on the horizon or anything else that you care to share?
Yes, we're working on two new products. So They've been quite challenging, I have to say. I think this is one of the, if there is a negative to formulating your own products, this is one of them, that it just takes such a long time. And running the business and trying to formulate new products is just extremely, it's a balancing act, but new
Yeah,
exciting things.
to say the
Two new,
least.
yes, to say the least, two new products, one in a new category that I'm really excited about. And then we have a really innovative, high performance product coming later on in the year, so around Q4. But I don't want to say too
Okay.
much yet, but it is, I'm really excited. The benefit, the efficacy of the product, the texture, I've already been testing and sampling the initial samples, and it's great. So I'm really, really excited to get some new products out.
Oh, fantastic. Well, can't wait to hear more about it when you're able to
Definitely. When I can, I'll
tell us
definitely
more.
show her more for sure.
Fantastic. Well, Rishan, thank you so much for joining me on the show. It was really lovely chatting with you. Hopefully get you back on at some point in the
Yes,
future.
I would love that. Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.